Welcome, everybody. This is Module 3 of the APR Online Study Course. And I'm Michael Henry, your technical facilitator for the APR Online Study Course. And today we're going to talk about what is, at least for me, my favorite subject in all of the modules, and that is understanding communication models and theories. History is interesting. But the meat of it, for me at least, is the communication models and theories. So we want you to participate, as you know, and so you can click on the attendee chat on the left-hand side of your screen, and you can type in a name of a communication theory or a model that you read about or one that you love. If you have a communication model that you just absolutely love, I see Wilbur Schramm in there and diffusion theory, agenda setting, diffusion of innovation, framing. That's fantastic. Shannon and Weaver, that's great. We want you to participate throughout the meeting. So if you have comments, feel free to put them there. If you have questions at the top of the screen, you'll see a little chat bubble at the top of the screen. And you can click on that bubble and you can type in a question if you have a question for the panel. And we're happy to have those questions come through at any time. So understanding communication models and theories and the history of the profession is 8% of the questions on the APR examination. Now, I should be, in the past, communication models and theories, I think, was about 8%, and history was 2%. So what's happened is you might get one or two questions on the examination that relate specifically to the history of the profession, and the bulk of those questions in the 8% might be in the communication models and theories. Remember that models and theories are the foundation of our strategies that we use to talk, to communicate with other people. So that is very, very relevant to RPIE, to research, planning, implementation, and evaluation. It is also specifically important in terms of audience selection, and you'll understand that after hearing the notes today. And it's also about the strategies of how we reach our objectives in communication planning. So it's a very, very important topic. And I have a great panel here. Rachel Carver, say hello, Rachel, and give a little introduction to yourself.
Hi, everyone. I am really bad echo. I'm the public facilitator at a small nonprofit called Outlook Nebraska in Nebraska. And I received my accreditation in June. And I'm just happy to be here and help any way I can.
That's fantastic. And we also have with us Joan D'Amico. And Joan, I would love it if you would introduce yourself just a little bit too. Casey may not be able to join us, and we'll try to get Casey on the panel. But Joan, would you introduce yourself and talk a little bit about your APR journey?
Sure. My name is Joan D'Amico. I'm currently a marketing communications professional at Accenture. I'm a 30-year PR and marketing communications veteran. And about 2 years ago, it was in the fall of 2016, I decided, you know, it's really time to get my APR. So I invested the time into the fall cohort. I also did a spring cohort, studied for about 3 to 5 hours a week, and then took the test this past January. So all told, it was about 14 months of work, and it really meant a lot to me to do that, because I was able to it really builds your confidence, and it helps you to think more like a professional PR person should think, and less like what you're told to do on the day-to-day job. So it gives you a broader perspective from which to actually counsel your leadership, as opposed to just do it a press release because they say do a press release. Think it in terms of how you might do that a little bit differently. And I'm glad to be here tonight.
That is great, Joan. We're really happy to have you with us. And Joan and Rachel as well, I would love it if you would just briefly talk a little bit about your tip on the studying. And Joan, in particular, I know we had some discussion about, frankly, I don't know how to say this well, but a seasoned professional in some ways has more challenges taking the APR because many people come to the APR with a great deal of experience. And can you address that issue?
Sure, I'm happy to. It did take me a long time to, I wouldn't say unlearn, but it was really to stop trying to solve the problem with what knowledge I had and to say, wait a minute, what's the APR say about this? So when you approach everything through the APR framework, it completely changes the way you might do something. And for me, that took some time, and it was probably 8 months into my studies that the light bulb finally went on. And it really, after the fall cohort, it was okay. And then going through the application process for the panel presentation was really another way to apply what you've learned in APR to your application. And then it was probably around 8 months in that I finally said, I get it now. And that was essential to really passing the test.
That's excellent. Rachel, do you have anything to say in that regard? Do you feel like you approached the APR sort of at the right time in your career where it all sort of fell into place? Or did you feel like you had to sort of go back a little bit and rediscover the process?
Well, for me, I had been in the profession for 5 years. And I didn't realize how much I didn't actually know about public relations. One thing that I will say is I know this course talks about how you should study before you apply. I didn't do that. I applied right away because I got really excited about, oh yeah, like I was a great student. I can do this. But I think it's important to do some thinking and strategizing about how you're going to get through it, because it is a process. You know, I worked full time and a mom, and had a husband that worked two jobs, and I had to apply for an extension because I knew I wasn't going to get done in my year. And so if I had spent some more time prepping before I turned in my application, I probably would have been fine. But it was a great journey, and I feel like my strategic thinking has improved a lot in just the overall practice of public relations. So I'm very glad that I did it, but I would strongly tell anybody that would ask is that go through a cohort, download the study guide, take some more time to learn how the process works before you actually apply for it.
That's great. I should let the people on the panel know, especially the folks on the phone, you can mute your phone by pressing *6. And if you're in the meeting, you can see when your audio is coming off of your phone and there is background sound. So make sure that you can either press mute on your phone or you can use *6, and that would keep the background sounds from happening. Because we love hearing dogs, but it's a little distracting. So if you have questions, we do encourage you to click on the little chat bubble at the top of the screen and enter a question. We had a question from an online candidate that said, I'm not an academic and I don't want to be one. Communication theory seems so removed from what I do each day. How does this relate to RPIE or media relations? And I'd love to go back to the panel and ask Rachel and Joan to address that issue. Joan, do you want to start with that question?
Sure, I'm happy to. This was a part that I thought, well, this seems kind of boring, and, you know, do I really need to know all this? But it actually turned out to be the part that was most intriguing for me, not because I memorized all the theories, but as I learned them, and you start looking at what's going on in the media, on television, in your job, in your communities, you start to see these theories literally fall into place. So, for example, inoculation theory. If you watch CNN and you see this, it's an apple commercial that they do, like, you know, an apple is an apple. You could say it's a banana, but it's still an apple. That's inoculation theory. The more you say something, the more someone believes it. When you look at the, sadly, the school shooting in Florida, you say to yourself, that's Lang and Lang, collective dynamics. Started out with, you know, an issue, which an unfortunate school shooting, and then that created a public, and that public created public opinion, and you can go around the eight steps of the theory. So it really gives you a framework for understanding what can work in given situations.
Excellent. Thank you. And Rachel, do you have any comment about that?
I pretty much agree with everything that Joan said. It also just gives you an understanding of your audiences, and it helps you understand how your messages are, how your messages can be interpreted. The Shannon Weaver model comes to mind, like the telephone. Sometimes things can get, they might not come across as you want them to. So how do you prepare for that? So there's all kinds of little things like that that these theories help with.
Excellent. Excellent. Thank you so much. So we want to move on to the scenario practice question. And actually, Mike Van Est is here. Mike, can you unmute your microphone and just say hello for a moment? Because you
Hi, everybody.
Hello, that's okay, great.
We have finally have a good connection.
Yeah, there is a little bit of background sound, so feel free to unmute to mute yourself when you're not speaking. And I'm going to have Marianne do the first question. So this activity is, and I want to make sure everyone understands, this activity is about creating your own question. Not so much about just doing practice questions, because doing practice questions doesn't really engage the brain as well as it does when you have to look at a sheet of paper and put down a question that you believe you might see on the examination. So, Marianne, with that introduction, what would you share your question, please?
Sure. Thanks, Michael. You are the communications lead for a women's health center and are working on a campaign to educate women about heart disease. In particular, you want to provide information about proper diet and adequate exercise that women can implement to help prevent a heart attack. This part of your campaign is relying on what predictive factor of Grunig's situational theory of public relations? Select one. A, problem recognition. B, level of involvement. C, constraint recognition. D, information seeking, or E, information processing.
Okay, this looks like this might be a little bit of a challenge for folks, but feel free to enter your response in the chat window, and we'll see. According to Marianne, who's the author of this question, it is C, constraint recognition. And Marianne, would you actually, I don't, no, we are not going to go through the rationale. I'll tell you why. I'm actually going to go to the panel. That is not a bad question as far as testing your understanding of the term. But the format might not be something you see on the examination. Joan, do you want to address that? Because you're the newest one to have been through the examination process. Do you have a comment about that?
Yeah, usually they won't ask you, they won't name a theory and then you pick out, or they won't describe the situation and you pick out a theory or part of a theory. They might describe like an order of something like Lang and Lang collective dynamics. What happened, you know, what happens after an issue is created, and they would list several responses, and one of them would be public debate. So you probably wouldn't see one exactly like that.
Great. Rachel, do you have some comments about that type of question? That's kind of more the didactic kind of questions. And there may be some on the examination, but not many. Do you have a comment about that?
Yeah, I did not. I did not see very many like this. It was, Joan pretty much covered it.
Okay, great. So one thing we want to, and Marianne, I'm not saying you have a bad question. You have a very good question in terms of testing, like you would be tested at a university. But the one thing to wrap your head around for the questions on the examination is they're looking for how you would apply theories to practical situations. And that's a really difficult kind of question to find. And actually, there is a handout that we recommend that shows the characteristics of the types of questions on the examination. And I would encourage you and anyone else who's confused about that discussion to look at those characteristics. Mike, I'm wondering if you can unmute yourself now and if you would be willing to share Layla's question here.
Of course. Of course. You are the communications director for a regional utility whose billing department is planning to change its online bill payment system. While online bill pay has been an option for your customers for many years, the current system is limited. The new system will bring greater flexibility, ease of use, added features, and more convenience for your online bill pay customers, and will also benefit the utility through improved payment processing. Existing customers will be required to register within the new system. Your boss has also stated that she would like to convert more customers from the traditional mail and walk-in forms of bill payment to the new online bill pay system. Roughly 65% of all utility customers currently utilize online bill pay option. Which of the following tactics will be the most effective in reaching and converting the customers not currently enrolled online? Select two. A, schedule social media posts on the organization's Facebook and Twitter accounts announcing the change and directing customers to the website for more information on how to enroll remain enrolled. B, include brochure inserts with the next two bills detailing the benefits of the new service, step-by-step instructions on how to sign up, and positive customer reviews. C, place ads in the local newspaper announcing the change and listing the benefits of the new service. D, create a registration area within the customer service center equipped with laptops and/or tablets where customers can sign up independently or with the assistance of a customer care representative.
Okay, and go ahead and enter your responses. And many of you are getting the idea that we have two responses out of those four that are being requested. So that's great. And there is, many people are going for B and D. Actually, most everybody is going for B and D that I can see. So wonderful. So it's include brochure inserts with the next two bills and also create a registration area for customers service equipped with laptops and tablets, etc. So that's wonderful. And go ahead and read the rationale for this particular question as well, please.
So the knowledge, skills, and abilities, communication models, theory, and history of the profession. The source is from handout number 29, summary adoption curve and time categories, and handout number 30, summary of diffusion process. Chapter 7, strategies and tactics, acting on the message, pages 185 through 187. Based on the five levels of adoption, the customers not yet using online bill pay likely fall within the late majority and laggard levels. They are aware of the online bill pay system, but are often, quote, but are, quote, often skeptical and somewhat resistant, but bow to peer pressure. Or are, quote, very traditional and the last group to adopt a new idea or product. Answers A and C will likely be most effective in notifying and making existing customers aware of coming changes. But these tactics won't likely be enough to lead the late majority and laggard groups to change behavior. Tactics B and D help get these groups to the next levels of the adoption process, interest, evaluation, and adoption.
Okay, so now let's go back to our panel. And Rachel, does that...
about being put on the spot?
Oh, and Mike, if you could go ahead and mute yourself. Rachel, did you feel that that was more in keeping with the style of the questions on the examination?
Yeah, I think this one does a good job. It's putting yourself, like you said, in that real life scenario and saying, what would you do following the APR process? And you're going to see a lot of choose two, choose three. In fact, that was most questions. You rarely had a question where you would only choose one. So I think this does a good job. It might be a tad long, but I mean, even some of the lengths of the questions varied too. So
right.
I think overall it was a good question.
Right, Joan?
I agree with everything Rachel said, and I would add, it's a good example of how you apply a theory, but the question was a lot more lengthy. I think the questions you'll see are probably more like the length of the one that Marianne had presented. They're usually about two sentences, three sentences, usually five answers from which you choose two.
Great. Excellent. Thank you very much. That's great feedback. And Marianne, would you be willing to read this question from Stacy Boyce?
Sure. A decade ago, your company was part of a high visibility lawsuit and suffered great financial and reputational losses. Since then, the company has tried to improve its stakeholder relations, but has had mixed results. One of its most significant problems has been poor employee communications, ultimately resulting in mixed messages to external stakeholders. How would you begin the process of turning the employees into skilled brand ambassadors? So select one. How would you begin the process of turning the employees into skilled brand ambassadors? A, complete a content analysis to review company message consistency. B, begin including all external communications in the employee newsletter with an employee-centric explanation of each message. C, examine the congruency between the company messages and employee views. D, conduct an employee focus group to learn where employees might agree with company messages.
Okay, go ahead and enter your response in the chat window and select one. Yeah, please do make a response, because I know some people have difficulty with this question, but make a response so that you're participating with the session. Great. According to the author, Stacy Boyce, she selected C. And again, I think we do need to hear the rationale. So, Marianne, would you read the rationale?
So Stacy says, congruence is the extent to which your own views match your estimate of another's views. In this scenario, the first step is to determine where company views and employee views are misaligned. By learning the perceived agreement, the company is in a better position to either conduct further research or to craft a strategy. Answers A and D are both additional research that may take place after assessing the two parties' agreement. Thinking in terms of strategy versus tactics, answer C is a strategy, where answers A and D are the tactics. Answer B is a traditional tactic, and at this point in the scenario, you do not goal.
Great. Excellent. Again, Joan, if you have some comments about this question, we would love to hear.
Yeah, that's very similar to what you would see on the test in terms of looking at the answers. There's usually two that you can eliminate right off the bat, and then there are two that are so very close that it's either one could be plausible, and that's when you really have to know the theory or the KSA that's being tested in order to eliminate one or the other.
Rachel?
This one kind of reminds me of differentiating between strategies and tactics took me a while to fully get, but this question, I think it demonstrates it very well and helps you. You not only need to know the KSA, but you also need to know, all right, what's my big picture, and then what are the rungs of my ladder that I would do after. So that strategies and tactics, objectives, all of that is very important, and that I think that's why it's such a big part of the test, and it permeates through all of the rest of the questions, I think.
Excellent. Thank you very much, Rachel and Joan. So now we're going to turn to the module notes for Module 3, Communication Models and Theories, and tagged on the end a little bit of history. I think we're going to concentrate mostly on the communication theories in this session here. Curie, are you there?
I am.
Excellent. Why don't you go ahead and introduce yourself briefly and go ahead and share your notes.
Thank you, Michael. Hello, everyone. I'm Curie, and it is my pleasure to present communication theories and models. And my subtitle is Understanding and Using Them to Up Your PR Game. The reason why I chose this particular topic is it's something that I am not comfortable with at all. Unlike Michael, who said in the beginning that this is his favorite topic, it's something that I really am very uncomfortable with. It sort of reminds me of learning algebra and trigonometry. I mean, do I really need to use it? Do I really need to know these models and theories? And it's cool. After reading it, it looks like it's given me a lot to think about. And so for my agenda today, I will be discussing the following. I will be giving you an overview of two communication theories, agenda setting and the diffusion of innovation. And I will also be discussing communication models, presenting Shannon Weaver's model and Wilbur Schramm's model, as well as four classic PR models. And finally, I will just give you my key takeaways. And what I did in my presentation, because I noticed in other presentations, I always felt that the source material is important. You will see a red arrow pointing to the recommended readings. And so I will indicate it there. So as I said, I mean, so many theories and models, so little time. Understanding theories and models really go beyond memory work. So it was a challenge for me to develop these notes that would be helpful for all of you. Theories explain or predict how things will happen, according to Shoemaker, Tankard, and La Sorsa in 2004. And it is based on observation, experience, and experimentation. And it's actually particularly useful in the third step of RPI, which is in the implementation or communication phase, and because it helps us prioritize our target markets. It helps us develop relevant messages, and it builds credibility and trust. And so I wanted to share, you know, this thing, and I really underlined this in the study guide, communication theories, why do we use them? I think it's important for us to say that good theories drive good practice. It sort of makes us more credible to the people that we are counseling. So there are various theories, and there's a lot of them, and they are used to develop and justify tactics and strategies in different scenarios. And in our study guide, there are actually different kinds of theories that are categorized in terms of how they are used. Transmission media effects, audience theories, message theories, and PR-specific theories. And many, many communication theories have evolved through the years. I actually did a Google search, and boy, I came out with a lot of theories that a lot of people in marketing, in business are using, and in public relations specifically, I will be discussing the two theories that are pretty relevant to our to what we do for different clients. Theories guide public relations work. And so in the recommended readings, I have, of course, my favorite discussion, which is in PR Strategies and Tactics, pages 172 to 192. And I wanted to share that with you because that was very helpful to me. So the first theory is the agenda setting theory. And this came about from the effects of mass communication. There are two very important concepts. It's priming and framing. And in the sense that this theory says that media has the ability to set agenda and to raise top of mind presence for a particular issue. And it also says that repeated news reports make this issue important. Social scientists and researchers have expounded on existing theories and have improved on them. And, you know, through the years, as the communication world grows and changes depending on new technology, traditional media is no longer enough. Again, take note of the studies, I mean, the recommended reading in the arrow. Diffusion of innovation theory is another theory that is very applicable in the practice of public relations. I skipped back on my agenda setting theory by actually attributing Mr. McCombs and Mr. Shaw. So I was not able to talk about that in 1968. But anyway, going back to the diffusion of innovation theory, Everett Rogers was an authority in sociology and statistics. And in 1962, he theorized how people adopt or reject new products or ideas. And he also theorized that innovation is communicated through certain channels over time among social system members. And there are five personality categories that we should look for in terms of identifying our receivers and the people that we are sending our messages to. I think in the scenario question earlier, they talked about early majority or early adopters, but it's important for us to understand these five personality categories. And now we go to communication models and why do we use them? PR practitioners need to understand how communication works. And models describe, explain, or illustrate how things work. And to be effective, we must know, you know, what is communication, how do we help people receive our messages, how people process information, how people's perceptions are changed, and the kinds of media and tools that are appropriate for a particular message. Researchers and scientists have developed models through the year. And now more than ever, you know, we have to really understand the full range of tools and media that are available to us. A working knowledge of the simplest model is essential when we start understanding how we use these models to help us become effective communicators. Next slide. Oops, sorry about that. So if you remember earlier, I think Michael pointed out a dog that was barking in the background. Sorry, that happened to be my 13-year-old Pekingese. And my dog was a communication barrier in the model, the communication model that we had earlier, where we have the sender, the encoder, the channel, the decoder and the receiver. And something like this is quite simple. You know, it's the simplest communication model there is. And back in the 1940s, two brilliant mathematicians worked for Bell Telephone Labs, and they decided to put together a model to explain how communication is transferred from sender to receiver. And so after looking at this, I think what's important is I wanted to ask everybody what is missing in this model. And sure enough, brilliant scientist tried to really improve on the simple model by saying that you need to have feedback. And what I did here, just for in order for people to understand this really complex looking model, is I wanted to see how I can interpret it for us. And so in the orange boxes that I put in here, I wanted to put in a sender, it's the organization. Encoder would be the language or the message. The channel would be the influences or how we encode the message. The decoder or the reception can be how it is interpreted. Is it credible? Is it incredible? Is it believable? And the receiver is the audience. And we always need some kind of feedback mechanism in order for us to see if our communication, if our message is being received the way it should be received. And I put here as an example that feedback could be a survey mechanism. And believe it or not, I was doing all kinds of research on what is available online. Of course, we have our study guide to talk about this particular model, but I actually chanced upon a recording made in 2013 in the PRSA website. So I included the link there. I think it was recorded in 2013, and I think the presenters were talking about different communication models and theories. And so it was great that that I got that presentation, and I'm sharing that with you as well. Thank you, guys. Thank you for the compliment on the graphics. And now we go to Wilbur Schramm's model. Now, I understand that Mr. Schramm is a communication guru, and he actually improved on the original simple model of Shannon and Weaver, and he actually included the very important concept of social environment or a common field of experience. And Mr. Schramm explained that communication is really something that people do. And so in order for us to understand communication, we must understand how people relate to each other. So this is where it gets super exciting for us, because how do we overcome these barriers? By using the 7 C's of communication. I'm sure everyone would probably have the 7 C's on their post, on their bulletin boards, or I have mine right by my laptop or my workstation, because every time I look at a particular message now or some kind of copy that I craft, I actually go through the 7 C's. I think it's something that we as communicators can do. And then these are tools that you can use that become creative strategies in planning. So these models can actually help you define your publics, identify the social relationship within the public. You understand context and relationship to encode messages effectively and choosing the proper medium to convey the message. So you see, once you understand, you know, communication models, that's where things start clicking in your head. And so in my recommended readings, you can see that you also need to review the 7 C's. There is a great chapter in EPR and Cutlip's book. And of course, PR strategies and tactics by Mr. Wilcox, Dr. Wilcox, which is a discussion from pages 175 to 192. Finally, very important are models of public relations, which is it's almost like this is an evolution in the way PR models are used in real life. And depending on the purpose, every organization may use any one or a combination of these models. Now, our study guide in page 123 has an awesome chart, an awesome table that you could look at where you will see sort of like a rundown of the four types. And the way what I did here is I just included the first three, wherein you have press agency or publicity, and its purpose is promotion, and the nature of communication is one way to an undefined audience. And then going down the list, of course, we have public information, two-way asymmetrical, and two-way symmetrical. And from my readings, and I think from the discussions in the various cohorts, I believe that the two-way symmetrical is the most ideal model of public relations. So, what are my key takeaways? Well, there's a lot. There's a lot to learn about, but, you know, I think this helped me a lot in just understanding how these models and theories can help me develop my plans and be more effective in counseling the people that I work with. Theories and models help us develop and fine-tune plans grounded in research, and it helps increase the certainty and helps reduce the guesswork in developing strategies and tactics. They also help define publics, help us craft more effective messages, and they help us build trust. I want to emphasize that you have to read up on the four classic PR models, the public opinion process, and Lang and Lang's collective dynamics diagram. These are good stuff, especially now with everything that is happening in the news. There's just so many things that can be applied. I mean, so many models and theories that can be applied to the situation right now. And my last but most important key takeaway is, while if this only accounts for 8% of the APR examination, knowledge and use of these concepts can up our PR game 100%. And with that, I hope that, thank you, everybody.
That is fantastic. Great job. Excellent notes. Wonderful. Let's get some feedback from our panel. Rachel, do you have some comments about Joan's presentation?
This was really good. This was actually an area I kind of struggled with too, because it was so dense. But I think it's important, and you did this very well, is showing how it relates to public relations and communications, because we use these things every single day. I know I do. I just reminded myself that I need to have the 7 C's up on my desk somewhere at work. But it's very, it's important, and this is important stuff because we do it every single day and we don't always realize it, but it is the foundation of what we do. So good job.
Excellent. Joan?
Yeah, I mean, that was terrific. I love the visual aids. Everything was presented well, and your delivery was terrific. One thing I would say, definitely the four PR models is likely to be on the test. There was a question on my test about the 7 C's, and again, it wasn't, you know, name one of the 7 C's. It was a question that you had to know the 7 C's in order to apply it to the situation in the question. Diffusion of innovation theory, I would definitely memorize that theory along with the adoption curve. Those are important because they might ask you a question. I think one of the questions I had was had to do with applying a certain type of, say, media, depending on, and I had to know that if they were going to apply this type of media, like buy ad space, for example, and where were they in the adoption curve? Well, the further down you are in the adoption curve, the less effective mass media is. So you had to know that theory.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. Great job, Joan and Rachel. Thank you so much. Yeah, and in fact, in the materials for Module 3, you will find a table that shows the channels that are recommended at different phases in the adoption theory. So if you're in early adopters, broadcast media is really not going to do much good for you. You know, getting the word out in a large scale fashion like that is really not going to work. There's also other areas where word of mouth is much more important. And so it's important for you to take a look at that table, and it will help you it will also help you in your work to be able to select the right channel for a particular in the adoption curve for. And by the way, the adoption curve is not just about products. It's not just the introduction of a new product. It may be the introduction of a new idea. It may be the introduction of a new a way of doing things, or a policy even in an organization for internal audiences. So I hate to say it. I love this module because theories explain so much about what we do and how people react to our messages. It really, in many ways, can predict what's happening. If you understand some of these models and theories, Curie pointed out, it was based on observation, experience, and experimentation. And they're used daily, really, in our actions. And also that theories are necessary to our understanding and organizing and integrating activities in public relations. So I really, really recommend, if you felt like you breezed through this module, spend a little extra time with it. And Rachel and Joan, I hope you give me just a moment, because this graphic here, which is the Wilbur-Schramm communication model, to my mind is gold. Because, you know, we think about how we communicate with other people. And, you know, we can waste a lot of time and money trying to reach an audience that is unreachable. And what this graphic shows, if you look right in the center where the two ovals overlap, so you have, let me describe it just briefly. First of all, you have two speakers, but they're in a social environment. So they speak a language that resonates with the two of them. Then they also have the context of their relationship. Is it a professor and a student? Is it a CEO and a line employee? What is the context of their relationship? Do they trust each other? Do they listen to each other generally or not? Do they fear each other? And then you've got the ovals that represent their sphere of understanding. And many of us know that we have tribal communication that's happening right now. Well, you could imagine these ovals are the tribes. So A might be in a completely different tribe than B. Now, the communication only happens between A and B if they overlap. If they don't overlap, you can try all you want to try to get communication to happen. It's not going to happen. And that's why sometimes we can't talk to our crazy uncle who watches MSNBC all the time or Fox News. I'm going to remain neutral on which one is which. But the truth is, if someone is indoctrinated in one sphere, they can't break through. There's no way to break through unless those spheres overlap. And that's where that golden part of the communication process actually happens. So to my mind, I just get spine tingles when I see this model, because it, to me, represents how the importance of how we communicate with each other. So I would love to, and also the diffusion of innovation theory, you can see those percentages, and Curie did a great job of showing that, but I would spend some time with that model as well. So let me turn back to Joan. Do you have anything you'd like to add? Although you may have been reluctant to jump into models and theories? Do you see any value to, or do you use it on a regular basis?
Oh yeah, I mean that's the beauty of it. You use it every day, but you don't realize you're using it. So once you actually take the time to learn these theories, and then you watch television or you look at communications that come out from other people or communications within your own company, and you say, wow, that's inoculation, or that's diffusion of innovation, or as you have described, without understanding that context of where the other person is coming from, it's really hard to have that communication. And as you described, you might never get that communication, the connection.
Mm-hmm.
So
Rachel,
do you? Important, and you don't. Yeah.
Excellent, Rachel.
Where my company has a lot of different audiences, and so we are constantly going, okay, how do we get this message to this audience in a way that they're actually going to listen to it and understand it? Because you're right, if you try to reach someone in a way that they don't respond to, then it doesn't matter. And so that it's really important to understand how, because everyone communicates differently. And if you've got multiple audiences that you've got to communicate with, and you ultimately want them to have the same thing, but understanding communication is going to help you accomplish your goal, but it's going to help you with those ways of accomplishing that goal, I guess.
Excellent. Thank you so much, Rachel and Joan, both. Kyrie has also volunteered to share a book review. So, Kyrie, can we bring you back in for the book review?
Sure. Should I take it away?
Yep.
Okay, guys. All right. Thank you once again for having me. I wanted to just present a quick review of Public Relations Strategies and Tactics by Wilcox and several other co-authors. So this is the 11th edition by Dennis Wilcox, Glenn Cameron, and Brian Reber. And I noticed that I come from Silicon Valley, and San Jose State is just a couple of miles away from my house. I went online and looked up Dr. Wilcox, and I was so impressed by the quote in his San Jose State page. So he is a professor emeritus of PR at San Jose State, apparently PRSA awardee and APR God. And this quote, "The world is a book, and those who do not travel read only a page," is actually so appropriate when I encounter this book, because it is a very, very thick and heavy book. But it was great. Sorry about the graphic, but it had a great layout. It's organized intuitively. It's an introductory textbook for students, but for someone like me who's always done communication in the last few decades, it's great reading, because it brings back a lot of memories of things that I never paid attention to, but it is very comprehensive. It actually also has helpful sidebars and insights that are great for all of us as PR practitioners. It's relevant and timely. Insights about things that have happened, where you can really come up with a good discussion about certain issues. It also has on-the-job references and various cases of campaigns and why they worked and why did not work. So as a whole, I think that, it's not really a cheap book. It's a little pricey, but I think it's worth our while to invest in a book like Public Relations Strategies and Tactics. I think it's something that we can all use as reference,
And hopefully if or when I achieve my APR, I will be very thankful to Dr. Wilcox, and I might probably even head over to San Jose State and introduce myself. That's it for my book review.
That is so great, Kiri, and I would love it if you would introduce yourself to Dr. Wilcox. That would be fantastic. Well, Rachel and Joan, we like to have the book review in the web meetings, mostly because people oftentimes don't understand the value or how to use the short bookshelf of recommended texts. On one extreme, we have people go out and buy all of the books new, which I do not recommend, and other people who basically just look at the study guide. Do you want to share your perspective on how you used the short bookshelf of recommended text, Rachel?
I think the study guide kind of gives you an overview of the KSAs. It gives you some great bullet points. And then the bookshelf gives you more context. I used EPR, Effective Public Relations. I referred to that book a lot, and I still even sometimes now, if I'm thinking something through, will go back to that one. And then the Strategies and Tactics the one that was just talked about is a good one too. So I think you have to pick one that works for you. If you go buy all of them, you're going to be spending a lot of money. and you're probably realistically not going to have time to read all of them. But I think it's really important that you spend a lot of time with the study guide and then pick one, maybe two of the bookshelf that you can use to supplement your study guide reading.
Excellent. Joan?
Yeah, I would agree with Rachel. I think I spent most of my time in Effective Public Relations, the 11th edition. I did early in the first cohort I took, I did Strategy and Tactics. I guess it depends. A lot of people who are more visual learners tend to go more towards the Strategy and Tactics. And then I also, the APR guide, I couldn't live without that. And then I did get the style guide, the AP style guide for some of the law. But I think the best two would be Effective Public Relations and the Strategy and Tactics along with the APR guide. If you just had those three, you would be covered.
Great. And we do actually say frequently that people, the older version of the Wilcox book, I'll tell you frankly, you probably could go 4 or 5 years back with Wilcox, and it's still very relevant. And you can get a book that's maybe 4 or 5 years old for one maybe 25%, if not 10% of the new cost. So you can save a lot of money by getting an older version of the text. So that's good. All right, we have come to the end of our time, and we have a great meeting. So next week, we're going to start a series of modules on RPIE. Module 4 is research, 5 is goals and objectives, and 6 is implementation and evaluation. And these are very critical to your success. Once you wrap your head around the RPIE process, frankly, the examination becomes something that is very doable. You can see the people who have volunteered for next week, so we're hoping to see you there. And let's some people have asked, where are the recordings and the slides? I actually post the slides for these meetings usually by noon of the day of the meeting. So if you have to just call in, you could go to the slides on the website and you could look through the slides as we talk through the meeting. So if you have technical problems, you could do that. Also, remember that the recordings are on the web meeting schedule page as well, and also the task sheets are on the readings page for that session. So let's please thank Rachel and Joan very much for being our APR facilitators on the panel today and providing some fantastic feedback. Thank you so much, Rachel, for being with us.
Thank you so much.
Excellent. And thank you, Joan, for being with us as well.
Oh, my pleasure. Thank you.
I'm really happy that you're here. And please do also thank Thierry for doing the wonderful notes and the book review. And also please thank Marianne and also Mike for reading the scenario-based questions. Remember to apply what you're learning to practical situations. That's really the key to being able to understand how to pass the APR examination is your application of this. Thank you all very much. We'll see you next week. Bye-bye, everybody, and have a great week. We'll see you next week. Bye-bye.